you had a class too you could go to and escape the room, don't you? Hey, I'm standing up here to do something a little bit different. I want you to give a warm Mountain View welcome to one of our global partners, Carrie. Just welcome her as she comes down here. So we're standing down here. Part of the reason we're standing down here is since the last time Carrie was here, she was diagnosed with a motion disorder. And so the lights and the walking, she can anchor the stage here, hold it tight, while she just shares for a moment. She is in New Zealand, and I'll just let you talk. How's that?
Yeah, thanks, Tom. Thank you for having me. Kia ora, koto. My name is Carrie Rambo Tohimotu. Yes, that's a mouthful. And I'm here on behalf of my husband, Tim, and myself, who serve the Lord in New Zealand. Tim is back home. Some of you know, some of you have not met him. He has renal disease, and he is waiting to be assessed for a transplant soon, so we'd love your prayer for him and his health. We're in very good care down there, and he's got lots of good people taking care of him, bringing him food, keeping him busy. But we serve the Lord in several different ways around Auckland, New Zealand. We serve mainly with international students that come into the country. We've stopped counting at 60, 65 countries. It's a blessing to get to know different people, different cultures, different thoughts, so that we can meet them where they are and share the good news of the gospel with them. I came to Mountain View, I was saying in the earlier service last week I was here, and they said, we're going to throw back the music to 94. And I was like, bring it on, baby, because that's the year I came to Mountain View as a super messed up 22-year-old. And Mountain View loved me, and they helped me know the Lord, and they raised me, and they got me into ministry, got me into the mission field. And I took a 14-month contract in 2004 as a very eager person. And 21 years later, God still has me serving in New Zealand. I was their sister then. I'm their mama now. And in 10 more years, I'll be their nana. But we're going to leave that for a while. But I serve on a campus called Massey University as the lead chaplain there. I also serve in the New Zealand police with chaplain there to take care of our police officers. Yeah, good stuff. And they're amazing people. And I also look after a group of missionaries that serve across our city. Our city is about the same size as the Portland, greater Portland area. So there's a lot of different places to go. But we just love having young people in our home. We have a great discipleship group of young ones from all over the world that just come and love Jesus and learn. On campus, we do more evangelistic things. We also address a lot of food poverty and other areas of poverty because we know that that's a very important thing that Jesus cared about. So with Mountain View's partnership over these many years, we want to extend our big thank you. Our young ones say thank you. They're going to see a video of some of their faces shortly because they all wanted to send a little wave and say thank you to Mountain View. But we just love you guys. It's awesome to be home and visiting, and it's just a real treat. So thank you for all you do, and just keep praying for us. God's doing amazing things over there. Thanks, Tom.
That, didn't you? Clapping too early. Anyway, surprise. I got to spend some time last weekend with Carrie. We had breakfast, and if you missed it, she has about 6 or 7 or 12 jobs as she serves on the mission field in Auckland, all doing pretty remarkable, amazing things. But this is the piece I want you to capture, because we talk about our global partners and global missions here at Mountain View, and we talk about how every penny of every dollar goes to affect life change. And so at Mountain View, 10 cents of every dollar goes directly to our local and global partners and our local and global missions. But I wanted you to hear, our support for Carrie specifically has impacted over 60 countries, not just New Zealand, but 60 countries. And that's where they stopped counting, right? And so good job. Thank you. I believe God finds great delight and pleasure in that. And so thank you for your encouragement and your continued support so that we can support Carrie. Make sense? And so, yes. And so camp season is underway. Craig mentioned the prayer card and the prayer opportunity, our camp strategic prayer night, where we're going to pray for MIX and CIY MIX, VBS, and CIY Move. I'll get those out right there. All right, July is here. For most, for several of us, it's going to be a blink. And we'll be into August. For others of you, you're like, how long is July going to last? If you want to speed up your July, there are some great opportunities. VBS is one of them. All right? So just think about those things. Sound good? So we started last week kind of an introductory message in the book of Proverbs, looking at the book of Proverbs. We laid some groundwork to try to understand this great book. And the book of Proverbs is all about gaining wisdom. Who would like to have some wisdom? Yeah, most of us do. Most of us do. And the book is filled with hundreds of proverbs or these wise sayings that most of us are familiar with. We played the game last week. Is this a proverb or not from the Bible, right? And we did okay. We did okay. The first nine chapters, however, before we even get to these hundreds of phrases, these first nine chapters are speeches. And last week we looked at a couple of those speeches. We looked at a speech in chapter 1, and we looked at a speech in chapter 3. And so we looked at these speeches, and we were introduced to some very symbolic characters. A father speaking to a son, or what we would call a kingly father, a royal father. And then we were introduced to a woman who was wise named Lady Wisdom. All right? And there are more. But what these two characters taught us last week are two fundamental truths that are essential if any of us want wisdom. And the first is, fear the Lord. Fearing God is the beginning of all wisdom. Like you just have to understand that God is big and that we are in awe of who God is and His character and His nature is beyond our understanding and some of our comprehension. He's just awesome, right? But the second critical truth is that we have to trust in the Lord even beyond our own understanding. That this is wisdom. This is the foundation of wisdom, to fear God and to trust God, no matter what. And so there are a couple of other characters that we're going to see show up this summer as we work through Proverbs. And so in the first nine chapters, we meet a fatherly king, and then we meet this woman called Lady Wisdom, and what they offer us is wisdom. And this wisdom leads to a life of stability, a fulfilled life, an abundant life, a complete and whole life. On the other hand, we're going to meet two other characters. One is a wicked man, and the other one is a sly and crafty woman named Lady Folly. Now, people ask me after, why are these ladies? I'm pretty sure it had something to do with Solomon having like 400 wives and 800 concubines. He was overwhelmed and he knows the extreme of both of them. All right? Don't take it personal. It just is. But how many of us are familiar with wisdom? Four of us. Wow. We have a lot of work to do this summer then. Man. Yeah, I guess then a lot of us are familiar with the sly, crafty woman named Lady Folly, right? We know her a little bit better than Lady Wisdom. Is that what you guys are telling me in second service here? Yeah, pretty much. Thanks, George. You're just being real, right? But so we get this wicked man. We get this sly and crafty woman named Lady Folly. And here's the trick. They're really attractive. They're really attractive, but what they offer, the path that they offer us, leads to chaos and it leads to death. How many of you grew up, I grew up, let me say it this way, watching Tom and Jerry? Yes, good. Tom and Jerry, right? The Cat and the Mouse. Episode after episode after, and nearly every episode, something happens where this little mouse pops up with a pitchfork, little red, you know, little horns coming out of its head and is yelling into the air. On the other side, this little angelic, you know, mouse pops up and is like all sweet with a halo and saying, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it, right? And I think what Solomon's getting at is that's real life, actually. It's real life. And what we deal with sometimes in almost every decision that we get to make is we get this little voice that's saying, oh, come on, worry about yourself, care about yourself, be interested in you. Oh, that's not going to work. Yeah, would God really do that? On the other hand, you've got this other voice that's saying, hey, there's a better way. Don't do that. And I think that this is real life, having these voices shouting at us constantly, telling us how to live and what to do and how to do it. And so today, we're going to look at Proverbs chapter 8, which is probably one of the longest speeches in the book of Proverbs. And if you know me, then you know that I prefer to work through things exegetically, where we kind of take a section, we talk about it for a second, we take another section, and then I'll try to make some point of it at the end. And I say try because we'll see how it works, right? Lady Wisdom, in this chapter, standing in the crossroads of two roads, and she's inviting everyone who is hearing her shout into God's sacred city. Look at this, Proverbs chapter 8, verse 1. Does not wisdom call? Does not understanding raise her voice? On the heights besides the way at the crossroads, she takes her stand beside the gate in front of the town. At the entrance of the portal, she cries aloud. If you were here last Sunday, then you remember Lady Wisdom is seen calling out in the streets. And I think that she's setting the scene again, or Solomon setting the scene using this character, Lady Wisdom, to remind us that wisdom isn't confined in our buildings, like in our homes or in our churches. That wisdom is real life. It's in the street. It's in the public place. That wisdom is available where people gather, where people interact, where people do everyday life together. And we're reminded that there's an eagerness. So she's standing in this crossroads in this very public place, and there's an eagerness to share about this wisdom. And so by speaking, even in the public streets, we're reminded that wisdom is available to all people, regardless of where you're from, regardless of your walk, regardless of your journey, regardless of anything else. Wisdom is available to all people, anybody who will actively pause and listen to what she's saying. And so we go on, verse 4. To you, O men, I call, and my cry is to the children of man. O simple ones, learn prudence. O fools, learn sense. And she gets away with calling people fools. If I was doing this, you all would be mad, all right? Just saying. Hear, for I speak noble things. I speak noble things, and from my lips will come what is right. From my mouth will utter truth. She's declaring to us, saying, listen, what I'm going to say is true, it's whole, it's right. Nothing else can come out of my lips. Wickedness is an abomination to my lips. All the words of my mouth are righteous. There's nothing twisted or crooked in them. They are all straight to him who understands and right to those who find knowledge. You read in Proverbs 8, you're going to be reminded of some of the phrases, some of the words that even Jesus used, like, what I do, you don't understand, but someday you'll understand. Take my instruction instead of silver and knowledge rather than choice gold, for wisdom is better than jewels, and all that you may desire cannot compare with her. And this is a beautiful, beautiful section. And I wish we had time because it's filled with this beautiful Hebrew poetic symmetry, and wisdom is for all people, and her words are just, and her words are true, and her words are right. She's telling us about what true justice is and what true uprightness is. And if we remember, Lady Wisdom in chapter 1 offers us insight and a new way, an open way to find fulfillment in life. And she even declares that she's more precious. What she has to offer is more precious than wealth, silver and gold and jewels. And so verse 12 says, I, wisdom, she says, I'm wisdom, dwell with prudence, and I find knowledge and discretion. Here it is again. The fear of the Lord is hatred of evil. Pride and arrogance in the way of evil and perverted speech I hate. In other words, one represents the wicked man and Lady Folly, and the other the wise fatherly king and Lady Wisdom. And she says, I have counsel, and I have sound wisdom, I have insight, I have strength. As a matter of fact, she says, by me kings reign and rulers decree what is just. By me princes rule and nobles, all who govern justly. That's my doing, is what she's saying. And so suddenly Wisdom identified herself with a theme that is consistent with the entire book of Proverbs, and that this is a moral discernment that is defined by God's wisdom and by God's will, nothing else. That's what she's declaring. True wisdom is to live in the fear of the Lord. It's the beginning of true understanding if we're going to gain any wisdom. She not only claims that she is identical to moral wisdom, but she claims that it's her wisdom that determines how humans live, how humans rule, how humans behave, how humans organize and live. That wisdom has insight and it has power to offer us. By means of her, it's that kings rule and rulers carve and they inscribe justice into society. Without her, that this isn't possible. Go on, verse 17. She says, I love those who love me. I'm like, amen, sister. It's a lot easier to love the people who love us, isn't it? And it's hard to love the people who are turds. I didn't know how to clean that up. So there it was. Right? She says, I love those who love me, and those who seek me diligently find me. Riches and honor are with me, enduring wealth and righteousness. And here she says it again, my fruit is better than gold, even fine gold, and my yield than choice silver. She says, I walk in the way of righteousness and the paths of justice, granting an inheritance to those who love me and filling their treasuries. And so, I mean, this section is a repeat of verses 4 through 11 that we just read, telling us that wisdom is available to offer justice, and wisdom is available to offer rightness for those who love her, who see her as more valuable than anything else. This works, doesn't it? And we know this. We know what God has to offer is better than anything else, right? Shake your head, yes. Right? But how often do we choose folly? How often do we determine in our own mind that my way is better? That nobody can possibly understand better than I do my circumstances, and therefore it's my way or the highway. And yet Lady Wisdom is saying, but what I have to give you is better than anything else this world can offer you. What I have to give you will fill your life up. It will make you fruitful. It will help you beyond anything you could ever imagine. And yet, how often do we still determine that my way is the right way and nobody can possibly understand, and this is the way that makes sense, and therefore this is what I'm going to do, while she stands at the crossroads shouting, don't do that. Listen to me. My way is different. And so she's there. She's saying it. She wants to fill us up. She's more valuable than anything else. And then she says this in verse 22, the Lord possessed me at the beginning of his work. The first of his acts of old. She says, ages ago, I was set up at the first before the beginning of the earth. And you can almost hear this as she's declaring that I was here first. It's like our kids, right? Racing to the car. I was here first. No, you were there first. No, I was there first. You know what I'm talking about? Yes. She's like, hey, I know. And the reason I know is because I was there first way before you were. Way before folly was. Way before. And so it's almost as if she's taken us back to Genesis chapter 1 and 2, claiming that I was there when there was nothing. I was there when God created. And so verse 24 says, when there were no depths, I was brought forth. Remember Genesis 1:1, the Spirit was hovering over the dark. There was nothingness and darkness. She's like, I was there. and I was brought forth. When there were no springs abounding with water, before the mountains had been shaped, before the hills I was brought forth, before he had made the earth with its fields, and even before dust. Like some of you say that I'm as old as dirt. She's got you beat. She was before dirt, meaning that she was before Adam. And so she's just saying, listen, I was there. And I think this is brilliant writing, and it's absolutely consistent with so many other scriptures. You could read Psalm 104. You can jump into Job chapter 36 or Jeremiah chapter 5, and they declare the same things. These verses define this three-layered world that exists. There's the waters above, or the skies, and then there's the waters below and the sea. But then you have this other dimension, which is this carved out boundary of land and sea. And she's saying, I watched all of that be created. I was there before any of it. Verse 27 says, when he established the heavens, guess what? I was there. When he drew a circle on the face of the deep, when he made the firm skies above, when he established the fountains of the deep, when he assigned to the sea its limits, so that the waters might transgress his command, when he marked out the foundations of the earth. She's saying, I've got authority because I was there. I've been present. She's claiming that all wise rulers and all wise leaders operate because of her. She was there before anyone or anything else. And then verse 30, then I was beside him like a master workman, which is a fascinating phrase. I ended up spending way too much time on this. In the Hebrew Bible, this word that represents this master workman, this is the only place this Hebrew word exists. So most scholars like to go and find the word and then attach it to other places where it's used. Well, they can't. So guess what? You can read almost any different scholar and they have a different opinion about what's actually going on here. So like a master workman. What a unique phrase. It's the only place in the entire Hebrew Bible that this noun is used. And so they often translate it as an artisan or a craftsman. So she was an artisan and a craftsman with God. And she was beside God, like she was there continually and faithfully. And like God raised this wisdom up like a nursling or like a nursing child or a young child. And so then I was beside him like a master workman, she says, and I was daily his delight, rejoicing before him always, rejoicing in his inhabited world and delighting in the children of man. This is what's incredible about Proverbs 8. It seems to be a template for a lot of other passages in the New Testament. It seems to point even to Jesus and God and the relationship between the two of them, particularly in creation. For example, John chapter 1, verses 1 through 3 can sound a lot like Genesis 1, but it can also sound a lot like Proverbs chapter 8, where John chapter 1 says this, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God, and he was in the beginning with God, and all things were made through him, and without him was not anything made that was made. Do you hear it? In Proverbs 8, Lady Wisdom is shouting that same wisdom, or Colossians chapter 1, verse 15 through 17. He is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of all creation. For by him all things were created in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible. Whether thrones or dominions or rulers or authorities, all things were created through him and for him. And he is before all things, and in him all things hold together. Do you hear it? Do you hear Lady Wisdom? And then jump to the New Testament and you see this connection between Jesus and wisdom. And so what? So what? Why take the day and walk through Proverbs 8? This is where I just want to share some things from my heart and what I really think is going on. The entire Bible is a story about God. The entire Bible. About God who created the world. And what we know God did is he created order out of chaos and out of darkness, and that God designed this world where humanity, his image creation, where humanity could thrive, where humanity could flourish, where we could find fulfillment and an abundant life. And this is what I know. God didn't only work, but God continues to work even right now to keep the universe from slipping back into chaos, back into darkness, back into nothingness. That's what God's in the business of doing. And through Lady Wisdom, according to Proverbs 8, what Solomon is telling us is that we have an important role. That we have a function, that we have a responsibility, that we have a job in this God work that he's doing in maintaining order, from keeping our world from slipping back into darkness, back into chaos. And to do this work in a very meaningful and fulfilling and influential way, we need to pay attention to the lady who's at the crossroads named Lady Wisdom shouting. And what she's telling us is living by God's wisdom can absolutely lead us to the most valuable things in life. That's the invitation. How many of us would love healthy relationships? Yeah, Lady Wisdom has the answer. How many of us would love to never compromise on our moral integrity? Lady Wisdom. How many of us would love a stable and fruitful and fulfilled life? Yeah, Solomon's saying Lady Wisdom has these answers for us. I love how Eugene Peterson in The Message says this in chapter 8, verse 10. He says, prefer my life disciplines. Prefer my life disciplines over chasing money and God knowledge over a lucrative career. And even right now, as I read that, we find the voices shouting, don't we? Lady Wisdom saying, man, this is right. This is true. Lady Folly saying, well, who's going to take care of you when things get tough? Who's going to help you when things go sideways? What's going to be there for you when the world falls apart? And we find ourselves, don't we, in the tension between the voices? And so Eugene Peterson goes on, he says, for wisdom is better than all of the trappings of wealth. Nothing you could wish for holds a candle to her. It sounds like a parable that Jesus talked about. A guy who found a treasure buried in a field, so he went and sold everything he had to buy that field so he could have that treasure. Eugene Peterson in The Message in Proverbs 8:18 says, wealth and glory accompany me, also substantial honor and a good name. My benefits are worth more than a big salary. Even a very big salary, the returns on me exceed any imaginable bonus. In other words, we cannot buy the things that Lady Wisdom has to offer us. And Lady Folly is shouting, well, if you're not paying a price for it, it's probably not worth much. Like, can you hear the tension? Do you hear the voices fighting? And so Proverbs 8, since you and I are created in the image of God, we are invited into this opportunity to live by God's wisdom. And we get to participate with God, made in his image, by creating, just like God did, little places in this world where we dwell and where we live, where we strive to make this place as much like heaven as we can. But unfortunately, too often, we reject God's wisdom. And instead, we like to do things with our own abilities. The things that we're familiar with. We end up actually worshiping our God called comfort and ease. And we fight and we argue and we pursue and we make really ridiculous decisions for the cause of my comfort, for the cause of my ease. And we become selfish and arrogant and prideful, and we say things like, my way or the highway. And Lady Wisdom stands at the crossroads and says, don't you understand what you're invited into? I'm shouting out and I'm inviting you to participate in enjoying God and what he's doing, the entire story of the Bible, to make this world everything that he designed it to be. to keep it from sliding back into darkness and sliding back into chaos. And so when we have the attitude of it's my way or I'm familiar, I'm comfortable, right? This is how you know Lady Folly is shouting, especially in the church. Well, we've never done that before. Yeah. Yeah. The church is crazy. You hire a pastor to take us to a place I've never been. That's crazy, y'all. Right? To be a leader that I've never worked under. You know how many mess ups there are? I won't tell you too many, but you could ask the people close to me and they'll tell you that there are a lot. Because all of us have to fight conventional wisdom. That Lady Folly is saying, no, this is the way you do it. Watch out for yourself. Watch your back. Don't trust them. While Lady Wisdom says, join God in what God is doing. Because when we participate out of our selfishness and our pride, Lady Folly, then we are participating in dragging all of God's creation back into darkness and chaos. So hear my heart. When we live by God's wisdom, when we join God in participating with Him by creating order from chaos and affecting life change through instead of darkness, when we participate with God and live by the wisdom of God and we create these little spaces that we call our homes and our families and our communities and our cities, we get to participate with God in God's creation so all of God's creation can actually flourish and have fulfillment and live in peace beyond our own understanding. Like that's what Proverbs 8 is declaring to us. She was here first and she knows better than anybody else. Listen to her. This is why she says this in verse 32. And now, O sons, listen to me. Blessed are those who keep my ways. Hear instruction and be wise and do not neglect this. Blessed is the one who listens to me, watching daily at my gates, waiting beside my doors, for whoever finds me will find life and obtain favor from the Lord. But he who fails to find me injures himself, and all who hate me love death. So just like here in Proverbs 8, today Lady Wisdom stands at the crossroads, doesn't she? Every single day of our lives, she stands at the crossroads and she's given us a choice. And the more I study Scripture, the more I understand that there's usually not a sort of, kind of, or in between. And if you know my personality, I love to be the chameleon, the man in the middle, right? What are they called? Switzerland? That's me. Sign me up. Like, I don't want to be on a side. But when it comes to God and kind of his choice, it's sort of an all or nothing kind of deal. There's no sort of, there's no kind of, there's no in between. It just is. And the choice that Lady Wisdom gives us is this. It's so simple and complicated at the same time. The choice is, will I live by God's wisdom? And by living in God's wisdom, will I participate in creating order and beauty and justice in the world? Or am I going to live selfishly by my own wisdom, fighting for my own comfort and my own ease, and instead of participating with God, working against God and dragging our creation back into chaos and darkness? Well, man, Tom, that's extreme. Well, this is what Lady Wisdom's just said. This is what she's just said. That's the decision. That's the choice. It's the decision in every story in the Bible, and it's the decision that every one of us has to make every day in our lives. And Lady Wisdom is standing in front of the city gate at the crossroads, and she is waiting for our answer. She's waiting. And you know what I know? Some of us are absolutely exhausted. And the reason we're exhausted, and the reason I know this, is because I know some of you. And I have conversations with some of you. And I love you all. And I pray all the time, God, will you help us be the people you want us to be, who are participating with you in order from chaos, light and darkness. But I know this, the primary reason that we are exhausted is because you know God has invited you to participate with him in creating order, and yet you're trying your hardest to do it your way. And you're trying your hardest to be liked. You're trying your hardest to be noticed. And you end up bending your own values. You end up bending your own convictions. You end up succumbing to Lady Folly and the wicked man over and over and over, while we have this fatherly king and Lady Wisdom who's telling us this is the truth. And you can pick any topic from the book of Proverbs, anything from marriage, justice, and speech, and poverty, and generosity, and debt, and friendship, and work, and forgiveness, and character, and substance abuse, and family. You can pick any topic that the book of Proverbs might address. And if you read the fatherly king and Lady Wisdom and what they have to offer, what they have to offer is influence and fruitfulness, and abundance, and fulfillment. But the wicked man and Lady Folly, you know what they offer? Violence, pleasure, wealth, and death. So I keep asking myself, if this is true, why do I keep choosing this? Why? If what Lady Wisdom is absolutely right about what she's saying, and what she has to offer is influence and fruitfulness and abundance and life and fulfillment, then why do I keep finding myself enticed by Lady Folly and the wicked man, and find myself in violence and just trying to find pleasure and wealth and ultimately death? That's what I've been asking myself. But let me ask you. When you know Lady Wisdom is willing to offer you influence and fulfillment and abundance and life and fruitfulness, why do you keep choosing violence and pleasure and wealth and death? Isn't the choice clear? I mean, isn't it? I read this week, I deep dove into a short research project that said our greatest regrets are usually not attached to some failure of a goal or an objective, but our greatest regrets are usually attached to a failure to uphold our commitments and our values. At the end of the day, people don't wish they were more ambitious. What the research project said is that at the end of the day, people wish they were more courageous and more generous. That when they think of their should-haves and would-haves and could-haves, they determine that they just wish they would have been more courageous and stood with Lady Wisdom when they had the opportunity to, instead of compromising, and that they would have been more generous. And I thought, wow, this whole research project is about Lady Wisdom and Lady Folly. And which one is more important to us? Some of you are exhausted because you want to be noticed and loved and liked so bad. And what you're listening to is Lady Folly saying, go do these things so people will see you. Only to find out that those people don't care. Jesus said this in Matthew chapter 11. He said, come to me. Doesn't it sound like Lady Wisdom in the middle of the crossroads? Come to me, all of you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. It's like Lady Wisdom. Proverbs 8, take my yoke upon you, learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart. And when you come to me, you will find rest for your souls. And Jesus said, my yoke is easy and my burden is light. And that's what Lady Wisdom is shouting. Join me. Participate with me. Let's create order, not chaos. Let's be a light, not dark. Let's create homes and communities and cities that are filled with peace. Lady Wisdom says, if you choose me, that's what we're going to do. And so as I read Matthew 11 and I just hear Jesus saying, come to me. I'm like, he's the one who made it possible for us to find this wisdom. And you can tell that Jesus walked with wisdom. What he did for us makes no sense in the human mind. God in the flesh, crucified on a cross, blood poured out. Man, that's not the way of the world, is it? To give so much that you have nothing else to give, and ultimately you offer your own life. And yet that's wisdom. And so every week at Mountain View, we pause for a few minutes. And we eat some bread. And we drink some juice. We have tables set up around the room that have a cup of bread and a cup of juice. Just to remind us that his way is the best way. To remind us that when we are tempted to listen to the voices and ignore Lady Wisdom, he's made a way. When there seems to be no other way, his way is the best way. And so eat the bread and remember today that his body was broken for you, that he was ripped apart, he was mocked, he was beaten. And his blood was poured out for you so that you had a way to get to Lady Wisdom and say, absolutely, here I am, Lord, use me. Yes, yes, yes. And so take a few moments, eat the bread, drink the juice. You're free to go. And God, that's our prayer. That's it. Our ways, the ways of the world don't always make sense compared to your ways. And yet they seem to make sense to us because that's what we all do. But God, we've heard wisdom today. And wisdom is shouting at the crossroads of our daily decisions. And every one of them is an opportunity to partner with you in what you've been doing in the world. So God, we say no to ourselves, and we say no to the ways of this world, and we say yes to you. And God, we acknowledge with the number of people in this room that could be dozens and dozens of different scenarios and situations and decisions. For some of us, it might mean being kind to someone that we struggle to be kind to. For some of us, it might mean that we speak less and listen more. For some of us, it might mean reaching out to the neighbor we've been neglecting. For others of us, it could be pretty deep, where we're striving to abandon an addiction and choose what you have to offer us. But God, today we maybe for the first time, maybe for the 25th time, declare to you that we are surrendering to your ways and that we want to listen to your wisdom and we want to partner with you making this world as much like heaven as we possibly can. That God, we don't want to be on the side of history where we're trying to drag society and culture and the world back into darkness and chaos. We want to bring order and life and light. And so will you help us, and only the way you can help us. God, tune our ears to hear your voice. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.